Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. My first reflection is true happiness of having spent those 2 days here at RNIB. We have been coming here for the past 17 years at different times, and for the past 5 years, we have not been able to really get together. And so this particular event was just a wonderful opportunity to reconnect with everybody. Does everybody feel the same? I saw some RNIB colleagues that were actually seeing each other after several years of not seeing each other, right? So that's great. And I want to say that the dominant feeling I had during this meeting is authenticity. And authenticity is something very powerful in what we do. And I think the reason why we all felt this really deep feeling of authenticity is perhaps after COVID, there is that collective understanding that, you know, as human beings, we are kind of social animals. We need to interact. We need to see each other. We need to, you know, read our respective emotions. We need to share more than just, unfortunately, through, you know, a flat screen as we have been doing for several years during COVID. So that's certainly a factor. But I think there is also something very specific to what you do at RNIB and what we saw during this meeting, which is the user centricity of everything you do, which is quite remarkable. I go to many conferences on digital inclusion, on accessibility, and so on and so forth. But this conference here is really, really authentically user-centric. And that's very, very, you know, very powerful, I would say. So it's an important dimension of it. And perhaps one of the thing I saw with very, very early on in the program was the RNIB radio and its 20th anniversary, which was fantastic to celebrate here all together. But you could see, you could hear also through those interviews from folks from all around the country here, how powerful that community through radio was important, you know, and important to them. That's another aspect of that user-driven culture for the organization here. And I just want to share it with you because it's not, it's I wouldn't say it's uncommon, but it's not that common, you know. So with that, the great mix of perspectives we got here from government members to, you know, the World Blind Union, to entrepreneurs, to persons with disabilities in different sectors, to user perspective testing. This was a great mix of, you know, input during this conference. So I want to specifically thank James Adams and Robin Spinks and the entire team here for putting this together. It was very refreshing, very useful, very inspiring. So thank you very much. I don't know where you are hiding, Robin and James, but, you know, thank you again. This was a wonderful 2 days. Now, during the conference, I felt one of the changes as well that I witnessed was there was a lot of humility in the contributions of everyone from, you know, advocates to policymakers to industry representatives. There was no one out there claiming, you know it all, I'm solving it all, it's, you know, I'm the best. Not at all, to the contrary. And so, you know, we heard presentations that were really remarkable in terms of demonstrating a shared sense of mission. I saw also that you know, tenacity was a very strong thing that inspired most people here. And the shared sense of mission was, of course, trying to make a more inclusive world for the long term, step by step, towards our kind of, you know, sustainable development goals or development global sustainable agenda for the world. And definitely, we all understand it, can't get to those objectives of the global agenda without being inclusive, and you can't be inclusive if you're not accessible. So we heard that from the Minister of Portugal. She said, I think inclusion and accessibility are the two sides of the same coin. I love that thing that she said. It was very powerful, very clear, very true. So I thought that everyone in this room who contributed, who spoke, who asked questions had the same thing in mind, that, you know, this is really like a very, you know, it's a crucial thing, and that motivates everybody's energy and tenacity. And, you know, we heard from Sonali this morning that, again, that 84% of the population participates in digital life, but only 56% of persons with visual impairment. So, you know, it's really a demonstration that we are still far from the stage where we should be in terms of an inclusive society. So the other aspect of that humility was very well stated by Christopher this morning. Where is Christopher? He's hiding over there. When Christopher said, you know, accessibility, I don't know if it's exactly your words, Christopher, but I think that's what you meant, so I'm just going to translate it with my slight continental accent. Accessibility is a journey, not a fixed destination. And that's also a big lesson we learned from this conference, is that everybody in their own capacity is making a progress one step at a time, you know, and trying to identify the next thing that has to be done. And it's just that progressive implementation that actually makes things happen, which, by the way, is a tenet of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, progressive implementation. And so we heard many stories that were very touching. I think, you know, personally, I was very impressed when I saw this gentleman from Scottrail showing up here at the stage. And, you know, in a very, very, very kind of humble way, trying to explain that he was doing things, but he was not perfect. And, you know, well, and then he went on and on and on and on and on to explain everything he had done, which was quite, you know, terrific compared to many other rail companies. So I think that attitude is something that, you know, is quite remarkable. And maybe it's something that is going to help a lot, you know, our ecosystem going forward. I heard the same from industry during those speeches, where people realized they had lots of, you know, gaps to fill. And so that was a nice kind of recognition. Okay, at least people realize, you know, there is still a gap. You know, nobody is claiming success. And then testing. We saw how important it is to keep testing, making sure that in that user-centric approach, we keep testing whether or not new systems and new innovations are in the way of accessibility or not. We saw that terrific example of the credit card that became flat, right? Everybody enjoyed that presentation, right? It's just a great example of a stupid thing, right? Really stupid. Those cards, and both cards, you know, they were maybe not the best in marketing. They did not look, at, you know, glitzy, but they were effective. You know, they had, you could feel them anyway. So there again, testing is so very important. Always trying to test at all levels of the development cycle is critical to success. And the other aspect of the conference that that reinforces that all of that is the power of user-centered innovation. And definitely, we saw several entrepreneurs here in the room, you know, especially for navigation apps and devices. That was a great example of the level of creativity that can come from the user community to solve issues. In that particular case, in a very, very astonishing kind of array of solutions and creative ways to solve the navigation challenges for persons who are blind. There is also something that I want to emphasize, which is that technology companies 10 years ago did not have many persons with disabilities on staff, and maybe 15 years ago, almost none. And today, I can tell you, most of the big tech companies are actually trying very, very hard to attract the best persons with disabilities to help with their development and their innovation. And I see it at Google, at Amazon, at Microsoft, and everywhere. And that's a fantastic trend, because it means persons with disabilities are in the driver's seat for innovation. And that's really a trend that is remarkable and needs to be, you know, kind of celebrated. I also want to emphasize that RNIB itself And maybe you don't see it that way because you are part of R&IB, for many of you here, but the way you have been cooperating with industry in a very gentle and friendly but firm way to push for innovation to make things more accessible has led to very, very interesting innovation. And we saw quite a few examples here even today, like in the field of television and so on and so forth. So that particular model has been historically developed, I would say, at RNIB first and foremost before it was adopted by other organizations of persons with disabilities in other countries. So you have a kind of a thought leadership, you know, kind of attitude here that's is really important, and I really want to share my sincere admiration for that, because it was a time when industry and the disability movement could not talk together very, very well. And so in that sense, RNIB helped tremendously our general kind of accessibility ecosystem to create more cooperation among stakeholders. Now, to complete my kind of set of reflections here, obviously, we talked about some very tricky technology trends. We could see during this meeting how impactful technology can be on persons with disabilities. And some of the stories we heard, I think it was the RNIB radio interviews, where we saw, we heard users tell their stories about their first time using a mobile phone with the accessibility features, and how liberating it was, and how empowering it was for their lives and to be independent. And so we certainly have seen that for quite a few years now, that mobile phones have been a tremendous kind of platform for persons with disabilities around the world. And as mobile phones spread all around the world, and now you have about like 7 or 8 billion users of mobile phones, it also triggered an economy of scale for anything that's technology for mobile that allowed to innovation to be fueled by so many more investments. And in that sense, you know, the competition between the Apple and the Google of the world has been the best thing that could happen, you know, for a person with disabilities. And we welcome that competition because for the first time in history, companies compete for accessibility. They compete for accessibility. Right, Christopher? Yes? And that's good. It's leveraging market forces for advocacy. Yeah? So we need to keep, you know, favoring that competition among our vendors. And, you know, in many ways, and I was chatting with last night, I think, about this that old memory. I was, you may remember the early days of Android. And at some point in time, you know, the competition between Apple and Google for accessibility features started to heat up. And the folks at Google felt, you know, wow, you know, Apple is an integrated system. People get the hardware and the operating system, and they control all of it. We deliver the operating system, but the guys who do the devices use it the way they want. And that's not going to be a very effective way to bring accessibility to the people. So with Android 3.1, and I forgot the year it was, but quite a few years ago, it's like almost like a dinosaur memory, you know? But with Android 3.1, Google said, hey, guys, you know who you are in the agreement you signed every year to use Android for your devices, by the way, you have got to implement all the accessibility features now. And if you don't, you have got to provide the equivalent. So suddenly, by a little paragraph in a document that Google was getting the manufacturers to sign, millions of people had access to accessibility features that they did not have access to before. So it's really to show to which extent global tech companies have an incredible leverage to actually support what we do here, which is to promote accessibility and inclusion. And so in some ways, the big tech companies are big allies of everything we do. And we need to learn that. We need to see how we can leverage that the best we can. You know? So anyway, that was kind of a personal memory, which I always remembered because it had more effects on persons with disabilities than 167 telecom regulators, you know, trying to push for the obligation to have those features embedded. So just as a recollection. So anyway, so technology has that power to transform people's lives. And I think what we heard today, and we all see it everywhere, that the new promise now for change and the next generation of innovation is obviously artificial intelligence. Now, I won't dive into all the fears and the problems and, you know, what how it may be misused and whatever, because that's kind of a common knowledge. But in our specific domain, I want to emphasize that we will see a lot of innovation over the next, you know, few months, few years, that will really transform our ecosystem, and there is no point of return. So first, there will be greater options for automation for the end user. I think we will see continued, and we heard it many times today, continued improvement for automatic speech recognition. It's a given that over time it will be better and better. I think what we will see also popping up this year and next year will be more AI application to support programmers who are coding, to make sure that as they code, they actually do not create problems in terms of accessibility. So the same way you see a kind of a checker, actually a checker on certain desktop products, you'll have the same for, you know, coders and development. I also just saw the announcement for the ChatGPT-4 GitHub Copilot. And so I immediately went to the Copilot website and Q&A, and I found out that, yeah, they already talk about accessibility. They are checking if the, you know, Copilot functions are accessible to coders with disabilities. What I don't know is if the Copilot understands how to make sure that the coding is accessible. But this is in the pipeline. It's happening just as we speak. I mean, those announcements just came out. So it's no question that we will see an acceleration from that standpoint as well. We're going to see also more and more AI into testing. That's a very tricky point because we know that from experience now that, you know, it helps scale up testing big time, but it's absolutely far from being perfect. And as we heard this morning, you better not implement full accessibility automation for accessibility unless you are sure it works, right? So many organizations are using automated testing. It's a clear trend. But most of them are also complementing testing with human testing, for now at least. Another area which we watch very carefully right now is the whole area of AI applied to signal processing for brain-computer interfaces. We have had a program at GIST RACIT called NeuroAbilities, which we have run for the past 3 years. And the whole notion here is to explore what's real, what's not real in that field, which is like science fiction, but is not that much science fiction based on the latest innovation we see pop up. So it affects the potential for a person with physical disability to regain control and sensory skills. For instance, we had a webinar with the first human being that had an implant in the sensory cortex last year and was able to feel his artificial hand when taking objects. That tells you how far we are in that field. The other series of experiments is more geared towards communications, and so there are tests now for automated dictation from thought with non-invasive sensor technology, which is quite, you know, frightening in a way, but, you know, for 1.5 million people with aphasia in the U.S., for instance, people who can't speak but have clear minds, it's an unbelievable perspective, unbelievable perspective. So we need to watch what's happening there also, because as we look at all those solutions, there are a number of ethical, privacy, security issues popping up. Who owns the data? Where is the data? What can be done with my data, right? And then from an end user standpoint, okay, how much of my privacy should I give up for getting the solution that allows me to be independently living, you know? So those are very thorny issues, which I'm sure will be feeding our discussion for the next 10 years of conferences, but they are not simple at all. They are really tricky. And in many ways, what worries us is, in some cases, well-intended regulations, like privacy regulations, security regulations, can be directly in the way of accessibility. And that's something we need to also keep in mind. We keep an eye on those regulatory movements so that they don't impede accessibility potential. And so the last panel, or the panel earlier today, you know, someone asked a question about the glasses. You know, why if you can get the caption in the glasses, whose responsibility it is to make the meeting accessible? To the end user with the glasses, with, you know, automated captioning in the glasses, or is it to the conference organizer? It's very, very simplified situation here. But the reality is that today, but the foundation of our accessibility legislation in most countries is based on the CRPD, and it is that there is an obligation for society to make things accessible to persons with disabilities, right? So we are shifting away from focusing on maybe accessible environment to, you know, advanced assistive technologies again. So that is a very tricky kind of balance here. I don't know what will come out of it, but it's a discussion we need to start to think about. Anyway, we are very strong as an ecosystem as we work all together. I'll finish with a little advertising page, can I? I really welcome everybody who is interested in developing the accessibility profession to join IIEP. I saw that we had many members here, which made me very happy, even quite a few certified folks. So congratulations. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier yesterday, you aren't going to do your bathroom without a plumber. And that's what we need. We need many plumbers. We need a plumber in each organization. We need a plumber in each school, in each district, in each company, in each organization, in each public agency, everywhere. Because if you don't have those people there, even with the best of technology, the best of automation, you won't be able to keep a user-centric perspective for digital inclusion in the organization. And that's what accessibility professionals are about. So anyway, with that, again, a big thank you to RNIB. Great to be here. And congratulations for getting back together in person.